Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
I do have a story about truck drivers being fucked by electric car mandate shit in California.
Yep, this guy's got a solution.
Oh, really? That's funny. Yeah. Well, you'll definitely have stuff to say about that one then. It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number you can call. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Jay,
and Mark.
Okay, good. We're all coming through clearly, I believe. Well, today there looks to be some breaking news about the Jeffrey Epstein case. And for listeners who don't know, Jeffrey Epstein is a man who has been convicted or was waiting for his trial with the feds for a sex trafficking case. And then he allegedly killed himself in jail, but there's a lot of questions about it. Oh, all the cameras turned himself off at the exact right time, stuff like that. People believe he is a pedophile, sex trafficking ring leader, but this is a call-in talk radio show. You can call in at 603-283-6160. And we have Alu from New Hampshire on the line. Alu, what's on your mind?
Hi, what's on my mind is that I miss Bonnie and Jay and Mark. So hello, guys.
Oh, hello.
Hey, man.
Hey, hello.
I was just thinking you haven't called in a while.
It's been a while. Yeah, I mean to call every other night to argue with you guys about stuff I heard, but I never get a chance because my amazing son and everything else was keeping me busy. So I had an epiphany that I want feedback from you people on. But before that, just a heads up, it seems like there's a few seconds of a hot mic before that you came on the show,
yeah,
on the podcast and on the radio.
Thanks for that.
Heads up. Don't say anything too crazy.
I realized it right afterwards. It's because I had the server muted so I couldn't hear the bumper music, but it is what it is.
Okay, awesome. Yeah,
thank
call
you.
The wizards at Ian, and Ian will set you straight. So, before I even get to my epiphany, about the Epstein thing that you mentioned in the intro, Dan Bongino is doing a decent job reporting of this, and he mentions that the story could be that they're, you know, they probably have a massive, disgusting, disturbing pedophile ring where a lot of the most powerful elites in the world, including, like, kings and princes and governors, have been. But even more important than that and related is that blackmail is important, because if any kind of nefarious have blackmail on these people saying, we'll release the videotape these very young girls on the island, you better do our bidding, that means that a lot of our leaders are compromised. So if you know, Biden and others are compromised, that's a big national security issue, because, you know, so that's blackmail. So that's, in a sense, the biggest part of the story, in addition to how disturbing the actual crimes are.
Yeah, I totally, I guess I wouldn't say believe, but I could totally see that being the case, that they run this specific pedophile ring for the purposes of getting politicians and royalty,
yep,
in England in compromising positions, and then they can tell them, oh, you have to do our bidding. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so I think that using the term pedophile kind of draws up the wrong thing here. Not to say that I find this acceptable, but that pedophile generally means a very young person, whereas I think, just as a guess, if Epstein wasn't a intelligence agent from either a domestic or a foreign intelligence agency, a huge opportunity was missed. And I tend to think that these very intelligent people at these intelligence agencies don't miss a lot of opportunities. But a great opportunity was missed, because I think, this is just me guessing here, that politicians could be relatively easily enticed after three or four drinks to, oh, I don't know, slip into the back with a gal that is near her 18th birthday, and that would be, you know, would catch a lot of people in a trap. I mean, that's a very believable trap. I could see twere I the sort that would cheat on my, you know, significant other or whatever the situation might be, that, you know, I could be tricked into that situation. I don't drink and I don't do those things. But nonetheless.
Especially nowadays where all those girls that are 17 and a half look 30.
They all, but Bonnie, when you get to be my age, they all look 17.
Oh, okay.
25 to, you know, from 12 to 25, they all look 17.
When you become a father and you have a daughter, they all look 14 and 12.
Yep. I guess that makes sense. I don't know what it is. I think it's just because I'm...
Yeah, Mark, I think I agree with what you're saying, and there's that. But then, additionally, I do believe that these elites who have gotten used to and no longer find novel pleasure with, you know, 18-year-olds or any other kind of novelty, they might be, you know, sick enough to move on to way younger. And there's, you know, all sorts of evidence, including from Bongino's Secret Service sources, that there are way younger people.
Whoa.
And kids.
That's the thing about it, Alu. I think that it would just be so silly for this to be such a big deal if it was like 16-year-olds. Oh my gosh. Like, I just think it's so silly. Like, oh, she was coerced because she agreed to be an internationally famous model and have her apartment paid, like, luxury apartment paid for by Epstein. Wouldn't most girls who dated a guy who had a good job be, like, victims of abuse?
Yeah,
if that were
exactly.
True? I think that,
there's
honestly...
There's a huge difference between the two.
Yeah, I think that there's
between
things we don't know.
Who's, like, goes back to the island 17 times and 5 years later regrets what she did because she was somewhat coerced because she wanted a good role in Hollywood and she slept with, you know, a bunch of producers and 5 years later said maybe that was coercion and maybe it was, but it's not the same as underage rape.
Right.
You know, if they see that she was willing, whereas if these people are abusing five-year-olds, that's a different universe.
Exactly.
So they shouldn't even be compared in the same universe of, like, murder compared to, like, smoking pot. So it's totally different universes. And again, a lot of things get conflated. So anyway, totally different topic. But my epiphany I just had like 2 minutes ago is the way to abolish qualified immunity. The biggest defense to our bills that failed a few years ago by like one or two votes in the New Hampshire House to abolish qualified immunity, which is a Supreme Court created doctrine decades ago that makes it essentially impossible to sue government agents, including cops, if you want to sue them for violation of rights under Section 98.
And social workers.
Yep. So it makes it impossible unless you can prove that essentially that courts have ruled that it's a violation of the civil rights or unconstitutional what they did in previous cases in the exact same set of circumstances in the same jurisdiction. Now, when states like try to abolish it, like New Hampshire, what they say is, well, police have to make split-second decisions, and we can't have them thinking about wrecking their brains about every court case ever and the laws and all that stuff, and they have to defend themselves. So what we could do is defeat that by putting in a bill saying that exempt from this, like they will get qualified immunity, meaning the courthouse doors are closed and you can't even enter to sue them if it's a split-second decision. But even better is this, because qualified immunity, what it does is, it's not an affirmative defense, like saying self-defense is an affirmative defense to homicide charges because, you know, you were defending yourself. This is not an affirmative defense. This locks the courthouse doors. If you try to sue before anything, before discovery, before anything, the judge kicks you out of the courtroom and says you can't even entertain the idea of a lawsuit because of qualified immunity. So what I think they should do is put into the law saying, instructing the jury or making it an affirmative defense in the actual trial, so you actually have to have a trial, saying that, and tell the jury, in jury instructions, tell the judge, if you find that this was a split-second decision, then acquit him, you know, or then rule in favor of the cop. But if it was the kind of thing where he planned to burn down your house for a week, burn down your house, abused you, shot you, and then stole $1 million from you a week later, that's not a split-second decision, is it? And therefore, he should be liable. So if we put that into the law, saying it's an affirmative defense, but you have to actually have a trial instead of closing the courthouse doors with qualified immunity, is that a way to defeat their arguments and pass a good bill?
Oh, that's really smart. Okay, go ahead.
I think it's better than what we've got, Alu. I still am of the opinion that police are humans, and humans ought to be responsible for their actions. And if they're not responsible for their actions, expect irresponsible behavior. And that's what we're getting from police. I would go also a little further and just go ahead and say that security guards currently are everything that cops are. Uniform, gun, taser, the whole thing. And for some reason, they can be responsible for their actions, and cops can't. just because the cops work for the government. And I don't really understand that. It sounds like really what the voters are asking for, or the representatives are asking for here, is that people not be able to sue the town or the city for the things that they are responsible for.
Okay, you bring up an excellent point, and here's the other big argument. They say we can't sue officers because they'll be bankrupt. They're worried about being bankrupt if they ever engage with any person. Therefore, they'll stay in their cop car, which I'm fine with, and they'll never want to actually save lives because we'll see them. Guess what? There have been studies done, tons of studies. Over 99% of police officers in the United States, I believe, are indemnified, meaning their government town pays for all lawsuits. If you sue them, they don't pay a penny. The town government, meaning all the taxpayers, pay for it. So no cop, technically like zero cops have ever been bankrupted or even had to pay lawsuits and stuff. It's extremely rare. There were two cops who did something horrific and abused a person, and they were forced to pay, but it was like $2,000. So probably didn't bankrupt them. They probably worked one overtime shift, and they were good to go. So that's another issue that they say, but again, that's a myth, because over 99% of departments totally pick up the bill for police officers. But another big thing is that there's a lot of conflation of qualified immunity that a lot of people, including some lawyers, have. They think it applies to criminal prosecution. Qualified immunity is only an absolute defense for civil lawsuits when you sue a government agent for violating your civil rights under the law passed 100 years ago for a violation of rights. Criminal prosecution, if a cop comes into my house and murders me, the real issue is that they're not prosecuted because prosecutors are literally their coworkers. They work together. And, you know, there's no dispute. They work together. And what we need to do is one day in my dreams figure out a way to construct a law that makes some kind of mandatory prosecution that compels the prosecutor to bring charges, because prosecutors have absolute discretion and absolute immunity, which is better than QI, is absolute.
Wow.
You can't even think of suing a prosecutor ever for anything. But if we could find a way somehow to compel them to bring charges and really try to prosecute them as much as possible, that would be the real fix, to be honest. Like,
there actually is a way.
Prosecuted.
There is a way. Take a mental note of this. It's called private attorney general. Mm-hmm. So what the private attorney general process is, well, it actually, I believe, it falls under like racketeering and conspiracy. So this was where basically private attorney general law act, whatever, that's not exactly what it's called, but if you start internet searching private attorney general and racketeering and conspiracy, this was basically passed like in the 70s, so like private citizens could bring charges as a private attorney general against like mafia and organized crime units. And so this is pretty easy to apply directly to like government agents, like in particular with the case that my family has had with New Hampshire DCYF, for example. There is an attorney, his name is Ross McLeod, and he works for New Hampshire DCYF. And one of the things that he does is he is constantly filing and submitting like motions for contempt, for example, for these social workers. So the social workers, Ross McLeod, on like this document, this motion for contempt document that he brought against me and my wife, he submits it as the attorney. And then the social worker, her name's Melissa Coombs, New Hampshire DCYF social worker, she swears under the pains and penalties of perjury that, you know, everything in the aforesaid, you know, document is true and accurate. And so the attorney submits this. Now, this attorney is submitting these contempt orders based on what they call an RTE, which is a right to enter order that family court rubber stamps. And you've got to understand about these family courts, they just rubber stamp everything because they have all these ex parte orders, which means like my wife and I were never invited to these court hearings. We didn't even know about it. They just do it all behind closed doors, ex parte. And the family court judges just pretty much rubber stamp every single thing that the attorneys and the social workers bring forth. Now, when it comes to contempt, you cannot put someone in contempt. This is like a maxim of law. You cannot put someone in contempt unless they've been ordered to do or to not do something. So with the right to enter, or the basically the right to enter, or the assessment that DCYF wanted to do in my case, where they're like, hey, we want to interview your 2-year-old daughter alone. We want to inspect your house. Mm-hmm. When it's coming
to
your house.
Ordered Melissa Coombs to go investigate you, not ordered you to allow that, right?
Well, what the order says, a police officer, comma, a social worker, or a child protection parole officer shall enter premises, inspect premises, and interview two-year-old, blah, blah, blah. And so what they did is they filed a contempt order because I rejected DCYF's offer to contract with us. This is, no, I'm not contracting with you guys. I'm not doing that. No, go away. And I actually filed a multiple-page cease and desist order with them, a fee schedule, a bunch of things to tell them, you know, how serious I was. I did not want to deal with these guys. So anyways, they just automatically do these motion for a contempt order, and they don't even have a contempt order. Nobody's actually in contempt because there wasn't an order for myself or my wife to allow them to enter my house or to, provide them, you know, let them interview my daughter alone. And this is just like fear tactics that they generally use against people who are, you know, poor and like, you know, lack information, ignorant poor people, because, you know, they have a scheme to harvest children because it's very, very profitable. It's lucrative. Under the Social Security Administration gives tremendous amounts of financial incentives for, DCYF essentially to traffic children. I mean, trafficking is buying, selling, trading, getting paid to do something. So, that being said, when it comes to, like, this lawyer is constantly doing this. So, like, one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to be challenging qualified immunity because I want to bring claims against this Ross McLeod and this Melissa Coombs for violating my rights.
And where does the private attorney general part come in?
Yeah, as far as private prosecution, how do you go about actually mechanically doing that?
I don't. So I studied this, like, 20 years ago, and I haven't looked at it in a while. But what I can do, Alu, is I can actually dig into it a little bit and send you some links on it because I think this would be something that you would
Excellent.
Be interested
yeah,
in digging
that.
Into. But if you internet search, the guy's name is actually Paul Mitchell, kind of like the hair, you know,
Oh, yeah,
dude.
I was like, that sounds familiar.
But he was Paul Mitchell, private attorney general, and I used to study a lot of his work back in the day. And it was essentially there's a way you can file as a private attorney general to basically investigate racketeering.
You would be considered the private attorney general?
Any private citizen can.
Wow.
And
you well, the concept of private prosecution, I think, has existed in some other countries in the past, maybe, where the person, and biblically in Torah and Jews, by the way, I think, you know, if someone commits a crime, it's you, or if you were killed, it's your family members prosecuting on behalf of the victim.
Yes.
And it's a whole different kind of ballgame.
Yep. And that sounds familiar as some of, like, the basis for, you know, this kind of stuff. And it was originally brought, you know, to sort of rein in organized crime because the idea was there was so much organized crime that, like, the Justice Department couldn't even deal with it. And the other problem with the Justice Department is there's so many people in the Justice Department that are compromised, you know, by way of organized crime. Essentially there's, you know, no justice happening. So like this thing with, you know, these lawyers continually, like there's Ross McLeod continually filing these contempt orders when he darn well knows that he is in violation of the law and he is bringing contempt orders against people who are not named in an order. Because he did this to J.R. Hull a year or so before he did it to me. Hmm. And J.R. Hull, in his attorney...
This is a representative in New Hampshire.
Right.
Yes, he wasn't a representative at the time, but he was a representative previous to this who basically, you know, made it his duty and his job to absolutely reduce the government, the state of New Hampshire, to very much reduce their budget, to cut them down as a state representative. So as soon as they got the chance,
that personally.
Right, as soon as he got a chance, the state of New Hampshire's goons got a chance to come against him. You know, these guys literally, because he gave his children ivermectin like several months before, they showed up, they got an emergency order to remove his children. They literally showed up with, you know, the equivalent of a SWAT team and ambulances to take his kids into custody.
Oh my God.
And because somebody had tipped him off that this was happening, he was able to get his kids out of Dodge. And he is he's actually working on suing, you know, the state and going after them. And he had no interest in running for a state representative again until they, you know, violated him so bad that he's like, well, I have to run for state representative
again. And is he one now?
Yeah, he currently is a state rep, yeah. He actually just introduced a bill, House Bill 1662, and it's one of my suggestions to him, to essentially bar... DCYF social workers from being involved in adoption agencies, essentially. Because one of the things with my case, what multiple people had told me, and now three former New Hampshire DCYF social workers said, one huge element with you, Jay, is the fact that you had healthy, good-looking, unvaccinated children that are blonde and white.
I was going to say, you know what blonde hair, blue-eyed little kids would go for in Mexico or something?
Well, just the above-board adoption marketplace, you would have to adopt a six-month-old, seven-month-old, healthy, blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy. It's like $50,000 minimum, and there is a waiting list.
10 years, right?
Yeah, but there's a massive waiting list. Like, they are adoptable immediately. So the Child Protection Service Industrial Complex is basically run by a whole bunch of wokeified, you know, LGBT, you know, the mentally, you know, incapacitated, the these people suffering from mental health issue called transgenderism, whatever kind of stuff, that are, you know, working in those jobs, you know, and
what, the DCYF jobs,
you know,
antidepressants
from,
or
right,
something.
They're just mentally ill people that have been furtherly made more mentally ill by attending all of these colleges that are funded by Jeffrey Epstein's friends. You know, just walk around any college where they have, you know, the gender studies and the childhood stuff, and they're all funded by, like, you know, Gates Foundation and Clinton Foundation and MacArthur Foundation and just, you know, all these, you know, friends of Jeffrey Epstein, essentially, and they are of an agenda. So they're not breeders, is like, you know, what a lot of these people will call themselves. We're not breeders. And
I love using that against people.
So they're not having children, and we know the left aren't having children. We just tell by the statistics they're basically not having kids because, you know, they're just not
into problematic.
It's problematic. And especially, like, you know, when you have, you know, gay or lesbian couples, you know, they kind of really can't have kids.
What's problematic? Like, the left thinks having kids is problematic?
Yes.
By the way, Olu, did you need to go, or did you have anything else to say? I don't want to, like, keep you on the whole segment.
No worries. I'm going to go in a minute, but one more thing is, there's a way to easily stop the government from doing things, from punishing people without due process, which I wrote the book on for some guilty last year. And they punish people without due process by saying it's an emergency. We don't have time for a hearing to hear the other side, so let's just punish them now and sort it out later at a hearing in a few months. Guess what? There are things like video cameras and programs like Zoom and many others that you can use to video chat and get someone immediately, and they're already doing court cases like this. There are plenty of video hearings. They can do this.
So you're saying they need to put in a bill for that or something?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for the call. It was a very interesting epiphany, and hopefully somebody takes up your bill ideas because they're really smart ideas. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. Jeffrey Epstein News coming up next.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
USA News Update. A judge unsealing accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein's client list, and several high-profile people were connected to him. Although no accusations of anything improper are being made, the names have raised a few eyebrows. Magician David Copperfield, former President Bill Clinton, the late Michael Jackson, and as expected, Prince Andrew were all on the list. Former President Trump back on the ballot in Colorado. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold said the Supreme Court made a caveat in their decision that if it was to be appealed, he could remain on the ballot until that appeal's decision. A disturbing video from a courtroom in Nevada shows a defendant flying over the bench and attacking the judge after she denied him bail. Miraculously, the judge only suffered a minor head injury. Corey Myers, USA News.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
I need a tax preparer. How should I choose one?
Using a paid tax preparer this year? Before paying someone to do your taxes, make sure they're qualified. Ask about their fees, experience, and training. Check with a Better Business Bureau. Avoid anyone who promises a higher refund. And review your tax return before you sign it. And make sure your preparer signs it too. For more tips, visit IRS.gov and search Choosing a Preparer.
All across the country, people are coming together to speed up what we can learn about health. The All of Us Research Program is calling on 1 million people to join us as we try to change the future of health. For your family, for future generations, for all of us. Visit joinallofus.org and find out how you can become one in a million.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
You control 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. And I wanted to tell you about Dash. Dash is sponsoring this hour of Free Talk Live. Digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit dash.org to learn more about Dash. That's dash.org. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Jay Noon,
and Mark Edge.
And I just realized, on my own, that I didn't have Mark up on the screen. So if you're watching the streams, you can now see Mark's beautiful face.
Indeed.
So in the last segment, we had teased it but didn't get into it. I'm not really sure what's new about this. I've only scanned it a bit. Apparently, Alu said someone named Dan Bongino is covering it in detail, and when I Googled that to see who it was, he tweeted, oh, this is a bombshell revelation. Watch my episode to get deep into what all of this means. So maybe you could go there. But
most of these clickbaity headlines for these videos are very, very disappointing.
About Jeffrey Epstein?
No, just this bombshell revelation, and then you're like, you know, it, like I listened to some YouTube videos work and travel. Yeah, today I listened to a couple.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, you know, I don't have, like, time to sit there and read, and I don't watch them, but, you know, like, for example, the last 3 days I was doing a whole bunch of tree work and firewood, so I got my, you know, wireless, you know, ear protection, earmuffs on, and I'm listening to, like, YouTube videos, and, you know, just the phones, you know, sitting on a tractor, and I got my, you know, earphones on. And
I do that, like, all day, too. Like, I'm vacuuming or whatever, and I'm listening to... Recently, my thing has been Eckhart Tolle, but sometimes it's, you know, political things, whatever. But I just thought you meant you heard about this Jeffrey Epstein
stuff. Yeah. So I've listened to a handful of these things, and, like, these guys just go on and on about, like... Not a whole bunch, just in general. Not like, I don't know about Dan Bongino. I didn't listen to what his, you know, you know, his thing was. But there's just so many clickbaity headlines, especially about, like, oh, the economy is going into a free fall crash, you know, doom and gloom. And then they're like, you know, and their whole video is pretty much just a segue for, take my course on how to protect yourself and invest.
Or, like, buy silver through my website.
Yeah,
or
things like that.
Well, the thing that seems to be new in the Jeffrey Epstein case says that the identities of dozens of well-known figures linked to Jeffrey Epstein have been revealed in court papers unsealed in the U.S. overnight. I'm just a little confused because I've already heard of these names. So what was it, just a rumor before and now it's official? It says high-profile people such as Prince William, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, Al Gore, Kevin Spacey, and Stephen Hawking were included in evidence filings. Actors Leo DiCaprio, or Leonardo, sorry, Kate Blanchett, Cameron Diaz, and Bruce Willis are in there along with model Naomi Campbell. None of them have been accused of any involvement in Epstein's crimes, but Epstein was a name dropper. Johanna Zjoberg claimed in evidence released overnight. Ms. Zjoberg was clear that she never had met them. So we can get into it.
So here's my commentary on this. Just because their names are dropped doesn't mean they had anything to do with it or they were a bad actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, in my, you know, lawsuit against the state of New Hampshire, it's going to include all kinds of names. One of the names that's going to be said multiple times in the documents is, you know, Matthew French, chief of police, Henniker Police Department. And his name's going to be said in it because he was involved in it. He was like the one of the good guys. You know, he's not being sued. He's essentially like, you know, was someone who was, you know, protecting my rights, protecting my family, you know, doing what was right.
But that is, and it seems that that could be a bit different because
it could be.
A lot of people who are completely unfamiliar with the court system at all might be like, oh, their name is in there at all. It must mean something. But I think this is just a different type of evidence because this person who knew him came out with this new evidence. But before we get into it, I do want to go to the phones because someone's on the line. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Hey, this is Rusty from Portland.
Hello, Rusty. Yep.
I wanted to address Jay Noon. You have claimed several times that all heroin and fentanyl users are on welfare.
I have claimed that.
Wait, I don't think you really claimed that. You claimed that.
I have said that before.
All heroin.
Well, here's a little advice for adults. Whenever somebody says all, they mean most.
Yeah.
Let me clarify this for you. So he's not wrong in his statement. I have said all heroin and fentanyl users are on heroin.
On welfare.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, on welfare. Now, what's the caller's name?
Rusty.
To clarify, what is a more accurate statement, and I've said this too, is go ask a first responder. So the statement, really, the accurate statement is, which I have stated also, so the all heroin and fentanyl users are on welfare is a statement I've said, and it's an ignorant statement.
Okay.
It's actually not accurate. Because I do happen to know, for example, guys that work construction that aren't on welfare that are using heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen them, you know, shoot up on the job site. I witnessed one guy with a paving crew on the side of an interstate highway. In his truck, as I was working on the paver, I opened up the door of the truck to go talk to the boss who was in the passenger side of the truck.
Was he, like, nodding out?
And the dude in the driver's seat of the truck, who was a CDL truck driver and a good standing license, literally was putting heroin into his arm, was injecting heroin, and he's not on welfare. Now, the correct statement that I've said is that ask any first responder about Narcanning. Giving Narcan to people who are overdosing.
It's Narcan with an N.
Oh, Narcan. Ask any first responder. So I have asked a whole bunch of first responders.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the people that you have witnessed overdose, either you've given them Narcan, or you have put them in a body bag that have overdosed on opiates.
Right. I wanted to address that because, you mentioned that you've talked to, like, ambulance drivers,
yep.
And they all say the overdose
victims
have EBT cards.
Yep.
And, first of all, just because you have an EBT card in your wallet does not mean you're on welfare. Lots of people have old EBT cards in their wallet. But,
an EBT card, EBT is a form of welfare.
He's just saying it could be expiring.
Okay. They're currently on welfare.
Oh, okay.
Well, all right.
Like, if you, according to, like, a national study that was done between 2008 and 2012, 55% of all people with substance abuse disorders are employed. Like, the first responders are usually dealing, but with the worst of the worst. Like, if you're overdosing on a regular basis or even at all, like, most of the, I mean, anybody can overdose anytime, right? But it's more
probably
likely.
Probably most people won't overdose on fentanyl because they're not doing it.
Well, a lot of people are doing fentanyl, but they may not know it because it's heroin. Like, I have a friend who wasn't the worst of the worst. He's not, you know, like, trash. He lived in a nice suburban house with his parents, only with his parents at 22 because the government had went after him and made his life terrible and miserable for selling weed. And then he wasn't allowed to do anything for years because he's on probation. The day he got off of it, he was like, I want to do a drug. Did heroin, quote-unquote, with his friend and overdosed and died on fentanyl. He's not the worst of the worst. He wasn't on welfare as far as I knew. But he died of fentanyl. I mean, I don't think anybody should be speaking in terms of all. Like, I feel like didn't you just say, or did I mishear you, that all fentanyl users are employed?
No, 55%
no,
substance.
55% of people with substance abuse disorder, like, that's all drugs.
Which could be alcohol, which could be weed, which could be, I don't know, you might as well include caffeine and tobacco in that.
Hmm.
I mean, they're substances.
but they're probably not the government definition.
Right. I mean, obviously, welfare needs to be abolished, but these are some of the most oppressed, screwed-over people in America. I mean, they're constantly locked in cages and stolen from by the government, and the reason they need so much money to buy their drugs in the first place is because prohibition has artificially inflated the prices. So if anybody deserves welfare, it's probably them.
Well, you know, I agree with your assessment that these people are really oppressed for their choice of drug. Like, we don't oppress alcohol users in the same way, and it's a very dangerous drug. But, Rusty, I have a really interesting question to ask you because my sister's boyfriend's also from Oregon, and he is always railing about, like, he's more like a right-winger, and he's always railing about, like, see, obviously legalizing drugs was a bad idea, because look at Portland. Well, what do you have to say about that? I always tell him, well, you have a lot of, like, messed up laws already in Portland, like no guns, a bunch of welfare. So what do you have to say about that?
Well, the drug crisis, the fentanyl crisis was coming to Portland whether we decriminalize drugs or not. Like, around 2020 or so, like, support for criminal justice reform was at, like, all-time high, right? But they swung too far in the other direction to where they made it to where if you get arrested for any kind of crime, like, crimes with victims, like stealing stuff, breaking into cars, they weren't locking these people up. They were still letting them right back out.
Hmm.
Like, if you, and that's one of the main drivers of the crime here. Like, it's not necessarily the drug decriminalization. Like, you can stop locking people up for victimless crimes, but to also not lock people up for crimes that have a victim is a bad idea. Like, that, and it just makes it look all bad because people lump it all together.
I see. So you're saying Portland just has a crime problem. It's not necessarily a drug problem only. Well, that makes sense.
They're soft on all kinds of crime. Like, I don't think the drug decriminalization alone is a problem. Hmm. It's a combination of things, and the city is horrible with money. They've always been a poorly managed city, and it was going to come to a head eventually. But, I mean, there's cities in other places in the country that have not decriminalized drugs that are just as bad to live in.
That's very,
and
very true.
And it's not like you're walking down the street in the middle of the day here and you're going to get robbed. Like, it's not that crazy. I mean, there's places you don't want to go, like, late at night, but it's, yeah.
When I was in Portland, I didn't feel unsafe. What I felt like was, this is a once great city that is now covered in garbage and poo.
Mm. Yeah.
That sucks. Well, thank you so much for the call, Rusty. I really appreciate that. Did you have something you wanted to ask him?
Well, with the respect of, like, welfare, so I would, like, say disability, for example, is welfare. So I personally know many people that I would consider my peer group, let's say 10 to 15 years older than me and 10 to 15 years younger than me. And they got into opiates, many of them because they got an injury, like a legitimate injury, and the doctor prescribed them, like, one particular fella, Vicodin. And he's like, the Vicodin grabbed a hold of this dude really, really hard.
Hmm.
And he was, like, a good, solid dude. His family had a really good, like, tire business. He was also, like, a little bit involved in agricultural things, and we were sort of, like, did a lot of business with each other, you know, on the ag side. And he was a pretty good friend of mine. Like, he was a good friend of mine, and I watched him go from, like, you know, I knew him before this injury. And so he's, like, working a straight job. He's working his side hustle. He's doing really good. He's, like, acquiring, like, he's doing well. And he gets injured. And they're giving him Vicodin. And basically, he had a shoulder injury, and he had, like, a couple surgeries. And then it got to the point to where he's, like, now he qualifies for disability. So he basically is he's, like, snorting Vicodins, you know, at this time, and his teeth are getting bad, and he's, like, getting really skinny, and you can just tell that, like, you know, he wasn't doing well, and he wasn't thriving. It's actually really sad, because he got, like, married, he had a couple of kids, and his parents sort of enabled him a little bit.
Hmm.
That doesn't happen in America.
Yeah. So but this guy got on disability. And basically he made a lot of money, like, when he was making money. And so he got on disability at, like, I don't know, I guess he's, like, literally about same age as me. So it was, like, 33, 34. He got on disability, and his parents said the worst thing that happened to him was he got on disability.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he got on disability, you know, he went from crushing up Vicodins to snorting it to, like, and he explained this to me one day. He's like, well, then I started, you know, putting it into, like, injecting it. And he was telling me about that procedure. Like, I don't know if he's injecting Vicodin or, like, heroin.
Hmm.
And then it just got to the point to where he's, like, buying street heroin.
Hmm.
And, you know, so, like, the wife divorces him. You know, the kids are, like, you know, it got real problematic for the kids. Like, the grandparents basically, like, sort of, like, lost the business. The parents lost the business, lost, you know, a couple of family properties over this deal. And it's a huge mess. I'm not even sure if the guy's still alive.
Hmm.
But I know, like, so many, like, hardworking, good dudes that got injured. The doctors prescribed them the opiates. The dopamine hit from the opiate essentially just ruled their life after that. And And then when they got on disability, then it got really, really, really bad because they didn't actually have to get up and go to work.
That makes so much
because
sense.
Because they got disability, they got the Section 8 housing.
And yeah, they know that money's coming every month.
Yep.
And they just get comfortable with that level of whatever it is. But
and on disability, you can't earn too much, right?
Right, right. You're not allowed to earn over a certain amount on paper.
Yeah,
but you also don't need to prove. Okay, so that's the other thing, too. His side hustle, you know, you just go do that as a cash cow. So he would like another one of the things that, like, you can do on disability is you can flip the drugs.
Mm.
Because now when you're a drug addict, you're familiar with the marketplace. So that was, like, one of the things that this guy was allegedly doing. I don't know that he was doing that for a fact, but you hear stories, like, you know, just assumed and believed it. So he was, like, you know, trafficking, you know, the narcotics himself as, you know, part of his, like, side hustle. Mm-hmm. And then he had a trucking company, and, like, just he literally just liquidated, like, I don't know, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars, like, of equipment for, like, you know, not a lot of money because he was just so addicted that basically when his disability money ran out, he would, you know, just start, you know, selling tools. And he would even call me, hey, you want to buy, you know, I remember this air compressor he wanted to sell me one day that I, you know, he knew I knew about. And I called his dad, and his dad said, no, don't give him any money. You can't give him any money. He's a full-blown junkie. Don't give him any money.
And what's sad about this story is that that's a totally legal drug that Big Pharma makes that a doctor gave to him. And there are just probably so many better ways to do this type of thing. You know, like, manage someone's pain than to give them something that's heroin light.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I wanted to make one more point. I feel like now, as far as, like, functioning opiate addicts go nowadays, it's almost more of them are actually working versus, like, 10, 15 years ago, thanks to, like, the gig economy, because whereas before, if opiate addict was, like, unable to get their drugs one day and they're sick, they might not show up for work and they get fired. Now they can do, like, DoorDash or Uber or whatever and work when they want. And the flexibility of that has allowed more drug addicts to actually work.
So, Rusty, you are not the first guy to correct me on my statement that all, you know, heroin users are collecting welfare.
I guess I just didn't understand you as saying all, but okay.
Well, I did say that before.
Mm-hmm.
It was an ignorant statement. And because I literally have had people that I've worked with that are like, I am a opiate user. I maintain my job. Like, people have sent me text messages. And I'm like, send this kind of message in a text message. Use something encrypted. Check out Ibogaine.com if you want to get off heroin. Ibogaine clinics, they got these clinics in Mexico where they give you Ibogaine, and it's like a whole week-long thing. It's like $10,000, and it's resets your dopamine receptors, like, basically back to the time you were born. So when you're done with it, you're not interested in alcohol, you're not interested in porn addictions, you're not interested in, opiates, all kinds of stuff.
Of course, it's illegal in the United
yes.
States.
Right.
Yep.
Schedule 1.
I was going to say, like, the worst kind of illegal, Schedule
right, right.
1.
I got another friend I went to high school with. Great guy. Oh, man, I love this guy. It's so heartbreaking, you know, to think about some of this stuff. But he was one that he heard me, I don't know, he heard through Facebook or something, you know, that I'd said this, or somebody clipped something of, you know, what I was doing and put it up somewhere. And he's like, he calls me. He's like, hey, it's so-and-so. You remember me? I'm like, hell yeah, I remember you, buddy. How you doing? He's like, I do coke every weekend, and I function just fine. and I'm like, aren't you, like, divorced? And he's like, yeah. He's like, you know, screw that B, but, you know.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
You know, and he's just like, he's like, yeah, you know, I'm fine. You know, I just, you know, I buy an 8-ball every Saturday night or whatever he was telling me about. And he's like, and he told me the reason that he got into doing coke is because he had some kind of, like, thing happen. And this guy's in Massachusetts. He had some kind of thing happen years ago where he was going to get whiz quiz, you know, urine sample
mm-hmm.
for cannabis use, for marijuana. And
we started coke.
We started doing coke because it either doesn't show up or it wasn't part
they
of the test
it,
or
yeah.
I don't. Well, from what I under, from actually, he told me is that like coke is all out of your system like within a couple of days, and like THC can be like show
30
up
days,
it, even 60 days it can still be in your system, especially if you like do a fast or you're like kind of like you know you lose some fat and the THC was stored in the fat, it will. You know, show up in your system even if you hadn't used a THC in like 60 days. That's what he told me. But basically, that's what got
him. Yeah, the government has literally incentivized hard drug use by putting however many people they've put on probation and parole over the years, and they know they can't smoke pot because it's in their system too long, so they do hard drugs instead.
And this particular guy's like, you shouldn't talk bad about doing cocaine unless you try it. It's a lot of fun, man. You should try it.
I don't deny that it's probably a lot of fun, but I've still never tried it because it sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, it's got very poor reviews. That's why I'm not into it.
The other thing is that a lot of people have told me it's like when I was in high school, I did like Adderall, and I remember this feeling of being like, oh, I want to do it again as soon as it's over. And people say that it's like that, but a million, million times, like as soon as you're not high on cocaine, you're like, I know it's 2 a.m., but I got to hit up the dealer. Like, I need more, and I don't want to do that.
My crackhead uncle begged and pleaded with me as a child. He was like 12, 13-year-old kid, you know, as he's, like, sold all his tools and all his stuff again, you know, because he would, like, do a bunch of crack, sell everything, you know, have nothing left, and then not do crack for 4 or 5 months. And then as soon as he had, like, a big chunk of a couple thousand dollars, he just went and did crack, and then he would just do crack for like weeks until all of his stuff was sold. I watched this guy do this over and over again.
Well,
and he's like, yep, don't ever do it. It's a monster that just keep calling you back. And so due to those poor reviews, you know, expressed to me by my uncle, I've been offered that stuff multiple times over the years. And every time I'm offered to it, all I can think about is my uncle saying it's a monster and it keeps calling you back.
I believe
it. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you so much for the call, Rusty. 603-283-6160. What do you think? Do you think the United States should make some of these things more legal? Are they incentivizing harder drugs by the marijuana crackdown? 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never not once been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.